Trade Association representing the majority of pulp and paper mills in Oregon and Washington. Our Oregon members include Weyerhaeuser, Georgia-Pacific, International Paper, Smurfit Newsprint, and Crown Zoback, and James River. I'm gonna diverge from my written testimony and try and shorten this up a little bit.
All right, great.
I think it's very important here to pay very close attention to what happened on the federal level with the federal Superfund. We have 4 years of experience by EPA trying to implement a very loosely written bill, which gave us a lot of things, including a lot of litigation and very little cleanup. Starting in 1984, Congress started a process of amending that statute, and in amending that statute, there arose a number of concepts which will attempt to remedy a lot of the problems which occurred during the initial implementation. I would like to just bring up four of the major concepts that I see out of those Superfund amendments that we feel is directly applicable to Oregon Superfund program. The first of those is that expenditures from a remedial action fund should be consistent with a systematic plan for identifying, assessing, and ranking sites according to risk-based factors. As Mr. Hansen testified, that is something that the DEQ envisions doing, although I feel, and the pulp and paper industry feels, that DEQ should be required to undertake that process through statutory directive. This is important for several reasons. First, it determines the magnitude of the problem in Oregon, something which is not clear at this time. Secondly, it will give a much better idea of the funding requirements for undertaking a full-fledged cleanup program in the state. Second concept I would like to see looked at is that the statutory strict liability for hazardous waste cleanup must be accompanied by strong incentives for voluntary private cleanup and should include a statutory directive to promote private cleanups before using any Superfund monies. Where there is a hazardous waste problem, a Superfund problem, business and industry usually will pay through fees or through voluntary actions. It's become fairly evident through the experience at EPA that private cleanups can be done at less cost than publicly financed cleanups. So we envision a directive from the legislature to DEQ to first of course, if there is an imminent and substantial endangerment to the environment or the health of Oregonians, take care of it immediately. Okay, but beyond that, first of all, the director should, there should be a waiting period, and I know the current Superfund amendments have a 120-day waiting period that can be adjusted accordingly, but there should be a waiting period to allow a responsible party to propose a cleanup plan subject to the approval of DEQ. And should work things out to allow that private party to go ahead and clean up their own problem. Okay. Secondly, the director should have the authority to partially fund that cleanup action. Say if there are multiple parties, some of them are absent, having the one responsible party that's willing to do the cleanup action might bankrupt them, allow some cleanup monies to be used to help that party out. It will get things cleaned up, otherwise they're going to go to litigation. Okay. We don't want to spend monies in court for lawyers. We want to spend money to get things cleaned up. Third, after the waiting period or after efforts to get a voluntary cleanup have failed, allow the director to go in and clean it up and try and recover the cost from any responsible parties. The third concept I'd like to see embodied in the Oregon Superfund program is that those responsible parties who step forward, clean up hazardous waste sites according to the conditions imposed by DEQ and according to statutory standards, and pay for that, they should be liable only for their prorated share, or they should be released from future liability. The major problem we have seen in federal Superfund actions is that particularly those parties who are very small contributors will not step forward and will not put their funds towards cleanup. because when they do that, they will be liable for the entire mess, and they will always be liable for that entire mess. So they will not admit liability. They will go to court and they will fight it out. Okay, that is what we've seen. So if you allow a party to step forward and to clean up their share, give them a release from liability, and you know, of course there's going to be some risk that fund monies are going to have to use to pay for future uncertainties or for orphan shares, as they're called, but monies will be spent to get things cleaned up rather than to litigate who is going to pay. Fourth concept is that goes to the how clean is clean issue. We feel that promulgation of standards for cleanup by DEQ should be guided by statutory principles to ensure that standards are reasonable under the circumstances. These could be very general, broad concepts that, for example, how close is the site to the groundwater? How close is it to surface waters? What are the present and potential uses of the land? What are the present and potential uses of the groundwater? Those are examples of some factors which should enter into deciding how clean is clean in a site and in deciding what type of remedial action will be taken. We feel fairly strongly that these directives should be embodied in the statute. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
A little bit confused. Maybe I'm just not quite understanding what you're saying. Between your second sort of request and your third, on one hand you're saying that... Well, actually, let me just ask you, what's your response to the director's proposal for a difference... Mr. Hansen has proposed made a liability proposal, which is not strict liability. What is your? I mean, you haven't probably had a chance to read the whole thing, but I mean, what's your initial response to what you heard?
We are in approval of the liability standards that DEQ is proposing. They do impose strict liability on owners and operators of hazardous waste sites, which are targeted for cleanup. They do not impose strict joint and several liability on generators and transporters of the waste that is in that site, as far as I read them.
Or presumably, generators.
So the joint and several liability aspects would only apply where you have more than one owner or operator. You have an owner and an operator.
Okay. But not extend beyond that to the larger net.
As they are now written, they do not.
Okay. And your association, how do they feel about that?
We are in favor of the liability standards as they are now written.
And do those liability standards meet the concerns you've raised in your testimony for, you know...
Yes, but there are other provisions of the bill we feel do not accomplish those, the second and third concerns.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Deaver.
Yes. I'm Frank Deaver. I'm a corporate environmental manager for Tektronix, and I'm here today to speak for AEA, the American Electronics Association. I, too, will not read this to you. You'll have plenty of time to read it later. But we'd like to cover five areas of concern. They are the cleanup levels, liability, amnesty, funding, and DEQ primacy. The cleanup levels, as it stands now, will be given another committee and taken some time to look at that. It'll probably be delayed for about 1 year. We support that delay. We think that that's something that needs to be carefully weighed and looked at and established. The liability issues, we're in agreement with Mr. Hansen on that. We support his proposal. I have some personal experience in Superfund sites. We are a party to the Kent Washington site. We are also a party to the Caring Chemical site here in Oregon. In both cases, I think everyone acted responsibly. However, when you get into the joint and several liability, I think there's a lot of unfairness that falls into that. I had the privilege of paying for something that we didn't have in both cases. The amnesty provision, I'd like to just say a few words about that. We also support that. As far as a survey being done, there have been two done to date. There was one done in 1980 when RCRA took effect, and that's where you have the present list that you have now. There's also another one currently being done and for the most part been done through the Community Right to Know. So I can't see a lot of value in yet another survey being done to... I don't think anybody else is going to talk to you about it. Either they've come up front already or they're never going to. I don't see a lot of that. In the funding issues, we would like to not get too far into that at this point. I think the one thing we'd like to bring out is that we have to remember that there is dozens of these bills floating around that all require money, and we're forgetting that they're all coming out of the same pocket. We'd like to make sure that everybody understands that those are going on concurrently. We'd also like to suggest a broad-based fee. I personally favor the solid waste fee. I think that's the most innocuous of the bunch. I think we've all over the years
which is the solid waste fee? The tipping?
That's the tipping fee.
When you go and dump in the dump, you pay some money?
Yes. Well, no. It's when the hauler hauls to the dump, and it's on a tonnage rate.
Right.
I spent 5 years on a solid waste committee, too. I got very involved with the haulers.
How much money does that raise?
That's about $4 million, as I recall, or a dollar.
Put in how much per ton?
That's a dollar per ton.
Okay.
That, to me, seems to be the fairest thing. As a citizen, I know that over the last 40 years, I have contributed somewhat with my paints, pesticides, and so on. And I, too, believe that the landfills are going to be the big issue, not the industrial sites. I think most of the industrial sites are under control. But I do think we have a lot of uncontrolled solid waste sites. So it seems to me that's the place for the money is to come from. That's a personal observation. In the second page of the handout I gave you, in the fourth paragraph, I really don't want to flay the issue. I want to flag the issue. That was a typo. As to DEQ primacy, we too believe that that's something we need to support. We've had some experience in having cities, counties, and so on making up rules as they go along. It gets very difficult. In fact, as you look now under the EPA DEQ rules, we're currently under both jurisdictions, and there's some difficulty in dealing with both federal and state levels. I can imagine what difficulty it would be going to city and county level. That's about all the comments I have. I have one request, though. Mr. Barrow's testimony is going to touch on a subject that I'd like to also comment on, but I'd like to give him the opportunity to present that first, if I may.
Sure. I think I need to understand a little bit more clearly what we're talking about when we talk about amnesty.
I think the way I view that, or the way it's been explained to me, is I think the concern is not for those who own property that caused the problem. Those people will have to pay. They are responsible. I think the concern is that you've bought a white elephant, and now you've discovered you've got a problem on it, and you don't want to tell anybody because you're going to lose your life savings, you're going to lose your property, and it wasn't your fault. I think that was the major piece of that. I can see that happening over and over around the state. Personally, I know a few people that have bought property that have problems, and if they tell anybody about it, they're going to have to come up with the monies to fix them. And they didn't have the money in the first place. They also didn't create the problem. I think we spend a lot of time going after the wrong people.
Okay. I'm going to have to get that. We don't have a proposal before us right now that institutes the amnesty.
The Florida provision has been used as a model or as an example. I think there are parts of that's very good. There's parts of it not so good. So we need to look at that and pick the parts that work for us.
Yeah, I guess I would ask if somebody wants to really promote amnesty, they should come forward with some specific language so we can look at it, because I don't really even know yet quite what we're giving amnesty to or for or how.
The problem we're running into is you're moving a lot faster than our committee is.
Oh.
We're trying to keep up.
I've been feeling like I've been grinding along. I don't know. Any other questions for Mr. Deaver? Senator Hamby.
Does Mr. Deaver know how the fees are generated in Florida?
No.
Or is there a successful state that we might look at?
No,
you mentioned
I
the
not.
Amnesty provision and... No. I thought someone had found a gold mine somewhere.
Our chairman of our remedial action committee may be able to address that. I don't know.
Dan Cooper, the chairman of the Hazardous Waste Advisory Committee. The Florida program that was presented to us is primarily aimed at underground storage tank cleanups because of basically gas station tanks in the ground in a state with very low, high water table. A lot of problems. It's a petroleum tax. It's 10 cents a barrel, I believe, on all petroleum products or other pollutants, chlorine, ammonia, etc. And it's collected by the state. There was a time period of approximately 18 months where property owners who identified themselves to the state as having leaking tanks that needed cleanup, the state would pay all those costs unless there was some gross negligence or other really extreme circumstances to suggest that they were clearly at fault beyond normal accepted practices of simply installing a gasoline tank in a service station underground, which now is starting to leak because of just the way steel rusts, particularly in Florida. So that's the Florida program in a nutshell.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Deaver.
Okay.
Dave Barrows. While Dave's coming up, let me just say that apparently there's been a little problem with the final amendment we adopted on Senate Bill 180, and rather than sending the bill to the floor to the concern of the veterinarians, I think my intention to try to pull it back and fix the problem.
We can do that right now.
In a minute, but if anybody has to leave, let me know first so we can go into a pause mode and go back into work session, okay? Mr. Barrows.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Barrows, representing Ken Security Systems, Inc. Recognizing the time problem you have, I'll try to be very brief. Number one, Ken Security Systems does not oppose the concept found in Section 12 of this bill of increasing the short-term tax at Arlington from $10 to $20. We do feel very strongly, Mr. Chairman, that just increasing the waste end tax at Arlington is not the ultimate solution to the funding problem of this kind of a program. And we concur with Mr. Cooper, with Osberg, that a permanent funding solution needs to be found. But we recognize also that we need to get on with the program. We support the concept of the program, and for that reason do not oppose the $20 ton. I have brought a couple of amendments to the committee, and I don't know if they've been handed out. I brought them to Mr. Green a few days ago.
I'm sorry, what?
Amendments. I have
from Mr. Barrett?
Yeah. They look like this.
No, I haven't seen them.
I can tell you very briefly what they are, Mr. Chairman.
Good.
Page 4, line 31. In section 9, we're in the provision that says...
Page 4, line 31?
Yes. This is the section that says that if the department wants to ask somebody some question about a potential site, they can do so. And we think there would be a value in line 31 after the word upon to add the word written, a written request. So that's not a biggie. We're coming to the big one. We're coming to the hand grenade.
We're just warming us up.
That's right. The next one, which is a little more depth to it, after line 40 on that same page, yes, Mr. Chairman. It talks about the agent of the department going onto the site and taking samples and doing things. We have proposed some language that says that any sample taken by a representative of the department shall be split with the owner of the site, so that the owner can also
perform testing,
make a test. The third suggestion we have has to do with Section 12 on page 5, Mr. Chairman, starting on line 30. Mm-hmm. And it's a policy question. And Mr. Green has the language, and I won't bore you with reading words, but let me just talk to you, if I may, for a moment, Mr. Chairman, about the policy question. As the members of this committee are well aware, Oregon law and practices look at off-site hazardous waste disposal facilities differently than on-site. And the effort has been made to encourage on-site licensure. We have one licensee in the state at this time, and our discussion has nothing to do with that licensee. First grade, excellent corporate citizen, and it has nothing to do with them. But we bring to the committee the suggestion that as a legislative body, we think it's time for a major policy review of whether or not on-site is sufficiently valuable to set up, in effect, a two-tier system. We recognize that there is some concern about the transportation issue, and that is the main, in our mind, one of the main, if not the main, differentiation, why we encourage on-site versus off-site. But on-site often is in a more urban setting, and I think the question we'd like the committee to begin to think about, not only in this bill, but in other legislation, is the question of whether or not having that material handled, treated, whatever, in a more urban setting kind of a situation, and as we think on-site will continue to grow, more licensees will come down the line, whether that trade-off of doing that versus the transportation risk of taking it off-site is a good trade-off, which way the trade-off works in the public interest. And so all we're suggesting is that that on-site licensees be included in this bill on the per-ten basis.
Aren't they now?
No, sir. Not in their interpretation. And if they're in the bill, then that's fine. I guess we would then merely ask that we make it abundantly clear that they're in the bill.
So the interpretation of Section 12, I can't instantly recall in my mind what these statutory sites lead to, but Section 12 doesn't include
on-site.
It just includes
Arlington.
That's it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I think that's a fair issue to raise.
Is that the hand grenade?
That was the howitzer.
Mm-hmm.
What do they call those little things you used to throw on the ground that would explode? The little atom, what are they called?
Atom bomb?
The little red things you throw on the ground, they go. Well, they were kind of like firecrackers, but they weren't. They were something, I don't know what they were called, but I wouldn't describe that as much more than that.
There are those, Mr. Chairman, who would.
I'm sure there are.
And I do, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I want to be real clear that the bringing of this issue by Kim Security to this committee and this legislature has nothing to do with Tektronics. It has to do with a fundamental policy question.
Oh, that's right. Mr. Gaber didn't want to comment, didn't he?
Hasn't he already
commented?
He
wants to get a chance to let Mr. Barrows make his presentation and then briefly comment.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I was hoping Mr. Barrows would be first. And
well, he suggested you. Okay. Go ahead.
It's a friendly adversity. First of all, I would strongly disagree, of course, with a fee spread to treatment or storage, mostly because we spent a lot of time in the last session doing the Senate Bill 138 encouraging treatment. And it would seem to me that if we go about putting a fee on that at this point, we do more to discourage it. We get back to having people throwing things in the back 40, which is what we were trying to get away from. We wanted it to be responsibly handled or disposed of responsibly. I think the other issue that needs to be remembered is that being one of the major customers of Chem Security Systems, we now pay that fee to the state, not Chem Security. That comes out of our pocket. This is just another pocket to take more fees from, And I would still, again, you know, one of the things that our company is trying to do is work with some of the small generators and small companies to create their own treatment systems so that they don't have the liability, they don't have the on-the-road problems and so on. And we're doing a lot of that. The other issue I think that's important is that while it's costing us currently, I think, about $26,000 a year in the $10 a ton fee, that would go to somewhere in the 40s. I did some rough estimation based on our treatment loads that if the least case, it would cost us an additional $73,000 a year. Worst case, $357,000 additional a year, bringing that to almost $400,000 a year in fees. So, yes, I do want to rebut. And, yes, we are one of the major customers, but I also wonder what that would do to some of the smaller folks out there that are having difficulty with the $10 a ton. We're going to have more difficulty with 20, and if they try to do the treatment on part of their waste streams and get zapped for that also. There's another piece of this that while we send about 20% of our waste that's disposed of to Arlington, we send another 80% either to recycle or to their facility in Kettleman Hills in California. But stuff that goes to California, we pay an additional fee to the state of California. So we have to pay for all of those things currently.
Senator Cohen.
The additional fee, how do the fees equate then generally between the California with all the add-ons and or are the type of wastes significantly different and yes. that you can't compare them? And I'll withdraw my question because I think I know what your answer is going to be. But
if you look at the Arlington site versus the Kettleman site, the differences there are the types of waste each facility will accept, yeah. Not the bulk or the volume. And the fees are the same or are similar, very similar to the same in both states. The state of California uses the Board of Equalization, which is a taxing system to get their fees.
But they're generally equivalent. It's really, you know.
I think California is slightly less at this point.
Okay. I think we're talking. Not way, way, way proportionally out of line.
No.
Okay.
But the point is we're already paying those fees. If I have to pay on the waste generated or treated, depending on how you came up with a formula, I could wind up paying it 2-3 times, depending on where it goes and what it's done with it. That would also irritate me a lot when I go to recycle it and have to pay a fee. Which is where most of our waste also goes.
Let me make sure I understand. On-site treatment that you're doing, mm-hmm. Is that a waste reduction treatment that you then eventually haul the reduced waste to Arlington, or are you just eliminating the waste?
No. What we have is a wastewater treatment facility. It has a capacity of 2.5 million gallons a day. We utilize about 600,000 to 700,000 gallons a day. We overbuilt, and then our economy went down. What we're doing is destroying the toxics. In doing that, we wind up with a metal hydroxide sludge. That goes to Arlington. That's the main thing that goes to Arlington right now, which is non-toxic under all conditions other than the fact that it's toxic by category. It comes from an electroplating facility, which puts it into a hazardous format.
So would this, let me make sure I understand, would this amendment subject all the water you're treating to a $10 or $20 a ton fee?
I don't know how you would arrive at a number other than using 8.3 pounds per gallon. I don't know how you would determine how much waste there was and what portion of it was waste, what portion was water. It's all combined. You'd have to look at the total flow.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd suggest, Mr. Chairman, is that there are a number of other smaller generators who cannot afford to go through the capital accumulation to build a kind of a facility that they have at Tektronix, nor do they have the volume or, I guess, even the need, who ship material, including water, materials with water in them, to our evaporation ponds at Arlington. And they pay $10, $20, whatever that is, on the full weight, including the water. So I guess what we're maybe arguing for is some kind of an equity for the smaller generators. who can't afford to be a licensed on-site facility.
It is an interesting issue, just because, I mean, the theory is to have the generators of waste pay for this. I mean, that's the theory. Not just the generators of waste who take their waste to Arlington, but the generators of waste. I mean, that's the generalized theory.
But then are you going to cause problems for people who recycle, for example?
Are you punishing the recycler?
Right, you're raising lots of good questions, I don't mean to sound like I've decided or anything. It is an interesting issue because.
Well, my main purpose is to bring up all of those issues.
Well, I appreciate that
suggestion.
You've done an excellent job.
And I don't get paid for this. I don't know why they pulled me into these talks, but I'm the shovel and bucket guy. I don't get this.
Okay.
That's what we pay them big bucks to do, decisions.
Are you through with your testimony?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, are there any further questions for Mr. Barrett or Mr. Deaver at the present time? Thank you both.
Thank you very much.
One final witness, Tom Donica.
Have we got a Tom Donica?
Yeah, we
have. How come he always bats cleaned up?
I don't know. It's just
how is it he always bats cleaned up? That's what I want.
Wait, okay.